There's a new Pope, Justin.
Oh?
And he's from Chicago.
The Pope.
My mom said, puts the open Pope. I was like, yeah, it's cute. It's clever. It's fun.
I personally feel embarrassed by a lot of this stuff.
In what way? Please explain.
We finally get a Pope. North America, the America, close to home. Mm-hmm. And immediately, the internet goes out there and just starts making a mockery of it. You know what I mean? They start with associating like all like the, you know, I made the dub Pope joke, but that's like the most tame comparison people are making on the internet for our Pope.
But here's the thing about all this. When this was being announced that there was to be a new Pope following the death of the other Pope, I was like, now I'm not Catholic. But I was like, do people care about the Pope?
You know?
I was like, not do people care about him. Obviously they do. But I was like, is the Pope still like an important figure in the modern era?
I think so. I think it's like one of those like positions and stuff like that, that it's like one of the things you forget about how important it is until you got a new Pope.
Sure.
I heard one of my friends describe it as like selecting the Pope is like a version of Survivor to a little bit.
Oh, sure. About like how they're all chosen. Did you see that movie Conclave?
I have not seen Conclave. Have you?
Okay. So I caught the last, I'm going to say 90 seconds of it. Me and my friend Kevin went to go see the Bob Dylan movie at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, and Conclave, we got there a little early, and Conclave was wrapping up in the main theater. And then the Bob Dylan one was in the other theater. And so we were like, oh, we might as well sit down. I had no idea how much was left in the movie. And we were like, all right, we didn't catch any dialogue. It's literally just a guy looking out the window and there's like a turtle in the fountain. And I was like, oh, I wonder what this means. And it's like cut to credits. I was like, oh, sure.
Oh, damn. Okay.
This seemed interesting. Elena watched it and she really liked it. She really, really liked it, actually.
The only thing I know about the Pope is from that Dan Brown book, Angels and Demons. Have you read that one?
I was going to say, yeah.
Seen that movie?
No, but Tom Hanks is in the movie, I believe.
Yeah. Tom Hanks is the, what's his name? I should know his name. I don't know his name.
The Da Vinci Code guy, right?
Yeah, the Da Vinci Code guy. I forget what, like, Langdon.
Couldn't tell you. But I guess my thing is this, like,
Robert Langdon.
Now this is a generalization and I'm going to sound like a hater, but I would like to tell everyone that I'm a professional hater. I think employed, unemployed, I'm a professional hater, no matter what, to the end. Again, generalization here, but a lot of people are like, I've seen online, like, creating opinions about the Pope. And I'm like, you don't have any, like, it's okay to just not have an opinion about the Pope, about the papacy. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's fun. I think it's fun that he's from Chicago. Maybe he's a Fall Out Boy fan. I'll say this. He was at the one World Series game that I was at for the White Sox in like 2004.
You were at that World Series game?
I went to the first game of that World Series. So I didn't see the one where Paul Konerko hit the grand slam at the end. But I was at the first one. And it was fun.
Not to be like that. How old were you?
I was in second grade.
I mean, prime time.
I loved it. I had a great time. I've always liked baseball, but do you understand what I'm saying? That like everyone like is like online, like hitting me with like opinions about the Pope, and I'm like, what? Now who cares? Obviously, people care, but like, you can't look at me and tell me that you have opinions about the Pope.
And you know, well, like it's like one of those things, like people who have been like related to the Pope in some way or another, like because they know him, they suddenly have the biggest Pope fans. Like Villanova is like freaking out because the Pope went to Villanova. They're freaking out because the Pope went to their institution.
Sure. And that's fun. Like, that's fun. I like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's fun, but
yeah. So basically what this basically means is that now I can be the Pope.
Yeah, I think this has opened the door. You know what? Like, white guys need more doors opened for us. So I'll say this, not to bury the lead here a little bit, but so I've been laid off from my job, and I was laid off last Thursday, the same day that they announced the new Pope and who he was and whatever.
So is
and
he the like, reason?
No, I was like, thinking about like making a joke, but like I've been laid off. Turns out I've accepted a new position as the Pope. That said, I didn't do that because I was like, I would like the messaging to be clear here. Please hire me. someone, one of my Blue Sky followers, follow me, hire me rather. It won't work, but
what if it does? With that attitude, it might work. So your job, you got laid off. How did that?
I did.
Yeah.
Justin, I would love to talk to you about that, yeah. But I won't, because there were like 9 things that happened to both of us this week.
Yeah.
And I was like, I texted you and I was like, it's so hard, like, when things actually happen to us, because then I don't know what to have for the intro.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's going to be our bonus episode for this week. So you're going to have to stay tuned to find out. It's headbox. On everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 242, the old 242.
Oh, is that
my name
thing?
Is Peter Hunspetek. No, I just mean it's just kind of fun.
Oh,
my name is Peter Hunspetek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, how are you?
So I talked about on this podcast how there was a mouse in our house a few weeks ago, right? So I was out doing yard work yesterday, and I saw a massive hole, like, in between some of pavers in our house foundation, a massive hole with grass around it. And the big question in our house, is it a mouse hole, like a huge mouse hole, or is it a rabbit hole, or is it something else?
Sure, sure.
And I don't know how to deal with it. These are the questions as a homeowner that you have to think about. Because if it's a rabbit hole, fine. Be there. Live your life.
Yeah.
If it's a mouse hole, I will commit genocide on every single mouse in that hole. Everything
just
is
pour
mice,
hot
all the mice.
Just
all
pour
the mice
boiling water. Just pour like a pitcher of boiling water down in there.
Yeah, that's how I had to get rid of open up my sump pump when it froze over in the winter. Just boiling
same
water.
Same principle.
Yeah, it was like one measuring, like two cup measuring cup at a time. I just go out there, pour some boiling water down it till it froze again, and then do it again. Eventually, pop. And boy, was it, you know, like people like popping pimples. I like opening up a sump pump that's been frozen in the middle of winter. That felt good.
Home ownership seems like a rotating cast of interesting challenges.
Yeah, but like never ones that you want to have,
no.
Or challenges that you are like ready to have. I imagine it's like having a child, you know?
Yeah, where it's just kind of like, one more thing.
Yeah.
Justin, let me give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news. Oh, by the way, we mentioned this in the intro. Like, I have been laid off from my job at The Gamer. I'm fine. I don't need to put me being fine behind a paywall. It's going to be fine. It's stressful, but it's going to be fine. Here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Sony acquires a new studio. Giant Bomb lives, and GTA 6 got a new trailer. We're going to talk about those three headlines and more. But before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. Today, our bonus episode is it's all the intros we were going to do today. Justin did the 999 challenge at a Chicago Dogs game. I did a solo road trip. I went to a metal music festival, someone who doesn't really like metal music, and I got laid off. So kind of an interesting, eventful week.
Yeah, we got quite the few things.
Got a bit of a catch up to do. If you can't support us monetarily, that's fine. You can follow us on Blue Sky at Hitbox Pod, or by rating this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
2 games in the Metacritic Roundup this week. The first is Doom: The Dark Ages. Doom scored an 87 on the Xbox Series X, an 85 on the PC, and an 85 on the PS5. I would like to just remind our listeners that there is still the BDS boycott going on for Microsoft. And again, since we were talking about Microsoft products in this episode, we're going to be donating another $10 to Heal Palestine. And we encourage you to do the same. That all said, Justin, Doom the Dark Ages scored pretty well. A lot of people sort of saying like, hey, this game is good, but it is a sort of departure from a lot of what Doom and Doom Eternal have set up in terms of how the games are played. It's a lot less rock, paper, scissors than those other games are, and a lot more like standing your ground, parrying enemy attacks, using your shield, as opposed to like zipping around the map at all times, just raining down a bunch of bullets and stuff like that. Obviously, you're still doing that, but this game just takes a little bit of a slower approach, it seems, while still obviously having a lot of the ridiculousness and whatever else from the other games. But what do you think?
I mean, like, I actually had to go back and look at this. The game actually scored like pretty in line with the other ones. Doom from 2016 scored like a Metacritic of, let me actually get a normal thing, 85 on the PC, 87 on Xbox One, 85 on PS4, and Nintendo Switch is 79. That's, it makes sense.
Literally the exact same, except there's no Switch one.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that enough is like interesting about what the game is. It's not like it's like a bad game. It's not like it's a good game. I think it's just like one of those things that it's more Doom, but different Doom. And sometimes what people are looking for in that Doom is not what they want. And personally, for me, I think hearing what they are talking about makes me feel like I'm much more interested in playing that game than I would be for actually going back and beating Doom Eternal. Because mostly with Doom Eternal, the problem with it with me is it required a lot of cognitive focus on my end. I'm not like a huge Twitch shooter fan to begin with. And that game kind of like had a few too many things that you had to deal with and juggle between. I thought the game was kind of hard, to be honest, but that's just, again, because I don't have like great Twitch kind of skills. I thought the Doom 2016, right? Or 2017, when did that? Okay.
2016.
I think for that game, that one was like difficult, but it was a little bit more manageable because it was just more like you're going to these different rooms and it was basically that like health or ammo kind of choice you had to make with your with your characters. And that was fine. And I liked that game a lot. Doom Eternal just was like a step too far. And this one seems like it's a little bit back to where the other one was in terms of it just being more of a grounded game. Because you're
it's silly to think about saying Doom is more grounded than Doom Eternal.
Yeah,
but it is. And like I agree with you. I think Doom Eternal gets a little difficult, but not in a like, I think Doom Eternal sort of confuses the idea of like throwing a million guys at you. Yes, is harder, but not in a way that's like challenging and fun, just in a way that's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And Doom, the first one, does not sort of have that same problem, in my opinion. It's not have that same problem.
I agree. I felt like the first Doom was much better balanced in terms of its challenge and stuff like that. And there's still ways to make it more difficult, like trying to like play on the most, like, was it the nightmare difficulty and stuff like that? Like, that stuff is like crazy, but like, it still just felt like more of a manageable shooter, whereas Eternal just didn't. But I'm glad it's scoring similar. I heard, I think, who was this? Was this Blessing described Doom the Dark Ages as having more deep dish pizza? Like, you remember your first deep dish pizza, he said. Like, it's really good. And then, like, you have the second one again, you realize, like, oh, it's still really good, but it's more deep dish. And then the next time you have deep dish pizza, it's like, it's still deep dish. I'll have this every once in a while. So, like, I thought that was the perfect way to describe this. Like, the game itself is just more of a good thing, but it doesn't feel as special because it's not the first one. And I think that happens lot of games, like with like a new genre, even like Assassin's Creed. One of the reasons why I like the Origin so much is because that was like my first Assassin's Creed deep dish pizza. You know what I mean? And then I had Odyssey and I was like, oh, this is a different one, but it's still kind of like that deep dish. And by the time you get to Valhalla, I was like, I had too much of this deep dish pizza. So That's going to be my new the new reference I make in, when thinking about games. Like, is this just another deep dish pizza, or is this a new and exciting food?
Can I say something? I love deep dish pizza, and I, as I've gotten older, I have it so much more often than I used to. And I saw someone make a and I'm the outlier here, because I saw someone make like a, it was on Instagram Reels. This guy who's like, here's the secret. We never have it. We don't ever have it. We only have it when you're in town. And it seems like we, and we never have it. And yeah. I was like sitting there, and I was like, I know that this is how most people are. I have deep dish pizza all the time, because I just love, for whatever reason. I mean, the reason is it's a lot of cheese and meat and sauce, and I like that. But to be honest, thinking about it, I could have it right. I could have it tonight.
Yeah, I just ate dinner and I'm hungry.
I might. We'll see what time we get done. And then you just mentioning that might just make me go and do that.
Hey, you just put an order in when we're in our bonus episode. By the time it's done, we'll be there, ready to go.
Oh, shit. From Lou Malnati's, I might. Because it'll be kind of late and Elena will be. Well, I might do this, Justin.
Hey.
To your point, I understand Blessing's point. I know that I'm the outlier here. I understand what he's saying. This is more good, but more good just becomes less
good.
Good. In the same way, like, I feel the same way about like John Wick movies, where like I like them. I like all those movies a lot. But that first one felt so cool when it came out. And then the second one, you're like, yeah, this is still pretty cool. And the third one comes around, you're like, this is cool.
But
so yes, 100%. And I think I am interested in playing this. I am personally waiting until the BDS boycott is over to pick this up. And I know, like, I might sound hypocritical because I've been playing the Oblivion remaster, but I got a code for that. So in my opinion, that's just a different situation. But that is that. Because I don't know. I really like Doom 2016. I really like Doom Eternal. I have no reason to think that I would not enjoy this as well. And I like the change up of the setting too. I think that seems kind of cool. Justin, the next game in the Metacritic roundup is Despelote. Despelote scored a 90 on the PC. It is unscored on the PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. You can play this on anything with a screen. Let me just pull up the Open Critic score just to include all of those other ones. It's a little bit lower than a 90, I believe. Despelote is an 84 on Metacritic. So just getting all those other platforms in there just rounds it out a little bit more, but it scored well. This came out a few weeks ago on May 1st, so yeah, almost 2 weeks ago now. By the time you're hearing this, I played through the whole thing. I got a code, so thank you very much to Papagenda or whoever was doing their PR for them. Justin, do you know anything about this game?
No, I'm just kind of looking right now at like some of the like video of it. It looks pretty interesting in terms of its like just general art style and stuff. No, I do not know anything about it other than I'm looking at it now.
So this is a pretty small indie game. It's set in Ecuador, sort of as the Ecuadorian national soccer team was qualifying for the World Cup in 2001, and it's just a little slice of life. Of like a handful of vignettes surrounding this kid who loves soccer, and there was like political turmoil going on in the country at the same time, but sort of the whole country was rallying behind their national soccer team. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
So you're just you. It's like a first person kind of adventure game where you're just like walking around and you're like, I don't know, like nine or so. And you go in the street and you play soccer with your friends and like you piss off your neighbors. And like there's just all of these tiny little scenes that sort of happen. But it's just so interesting because it just paints this picture of like how important sports are to people and how important they are. Like soccer is specifically, it's not that important for us like in America, but like around the world, soccer is fucking huge, you know? And they talk about how they're going to a wedding. Like, it's like the main character's dad's brother's wedding or something like that. Someone in the family's wedding. And they're like, the mom and the dad are like having this conversation, kind of a debate about like, they're not going to play the game at the wedding. They're not going to play the one of the playoff games at the wedding. And the dad's like, of course they are. And the mom's like, why? And he's like, because if they don't, people are going to leave to go watch it. You know, like, and like, to me, like, that moment was just so like powerful. Cause it's like, wow, that is important to people. You know what I mean? And then also like the bride and groom want to see it too, you know, like it's just this really important thing. Yeah, it was cute. It was interesting. I don't really care about soccer, and I obviously don't have any like background with Ecuador. I don't know anything about it. But so like the parts that I sort of latched onto were the smaller moments about like being a kid, or like about how big everything feels when you're a kid and how that sort of changes when you're an adult. It was really interesting. It's like took 2 hours to complete. And serves kind of as just a little slice of life from this time, and also acts as a museum, kind of like an interactive museum exhibit. Cause then it sort of talks about like, towards the end, the creator of the game, there's like a running narration, but the narration comes from like the guy who made the game. And, he sort of like takes you out of this sort of like interesting, like part hand drawn, part like photographed art style. And just is a 3D scan of this park. And he says like, this is what this park actually looks like from the scans we did in, you know, 2023 or whatever. But like the scans are all like, not like terrible, but it just is like these like amorphous blobs and stuff like that. Cause it's just not like a perfect thing. Mm-hmm. And he says like, I was never allowed to come here as a kid because my parents thought it was too dangerous, but I wanted to show you what it actually looks like. Or he says like, there was no footage that I could find of this one soccer match that didn't have this giant fucking ad playing on it. So you just have to watch this with this giant ad playing on it. But it's kind of special because it like, you know, that's what it was, you know, and this is what we all saw. And like this one moment where someone scores this like really important goal is kind of being interrupted by just this advertisement. it was really, really interesting. And I liked it. It's like 2 hours. So did it in a single setting.
What is the actual gameplay of it? Like, I see it's kind of like a first person. Like, what do you actually do? How do you interact with it?
So it's kind of just a first person adventure game where you go and just like run around this small little neighborhood. You are either like, that is the when you are the majority of the game is that there are these handful of small little scenes that you like run around in and like sort of just like inspect different elements of. You do play a fair amount of soccer, and the soccer is played by like just sort of like flicking the right stick. And that'll like give just like a regular like pass of the ball, or you can hold the stick back and then flick it forward to like kick it harder or to like kick it up. And you like play soccer with like your friends in the park and things like that. A lot of the times, like your mom will say like, hey, I need you to be back at 6 o'clock, and you've got a wristwatch and you just like look down and make sure that you're, you know, on time or whatever. And if you're not on time, she like comes out and scolds you and like, comes and picks you up basically. So like it's pretty gameplay light. And in fact, those moments were the things that I kind of liked the least, because I was just interested in the time period and like more of the moments that they thought were the most interesting to include and tie together, you know? Like I said, like being in the car and hearing the conversation about like the wedding was like kind of interesting. And then there's like the scene that you end up going to the wedding and they, you know, sure enough, have the game on and stuff like that. Those were the things that I thought were really interesting. The actual game part where you're just like running around was kind of hit or miss. And you end up just sort of like passing the ball between you and your friends for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. And it's a little like, it can be a little tedious, but that's kind of the point. You know what I mean? Cause it's like just narrate, like just showing you like, you're just kicking the ball with back and forth, and that's kind of fun, you know, and you guys are like all sort of like talking at each other, like talking about what's your life and like what's going on. But isn't that kind of nice sometimes, you know, to like not have anything to do. So like as a game, so like the scores on this are either like people are giving it like a 10 out of 10 or like a 5 out of 10. And the people who are giving it a 10 out of 10 are like totally get what it's doing and are like, wow, you know, as like an art sort of like piece, like museum, like, or like kind of like interactable documentary almost. Like, this is phenomenal, and it's very moving and touching, and like really illustrates how this sort of stuff was. And the people give it like a 5 out of 10 are like, this is kind of a boring game, and both of those people are right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It reminds me of Venba, not in any way in terms of like the game or the story or anything like that, but in terms of like, that is a game that's a bad game, but if you are just playing it to play a video game, you're missing the point a little bit. You know what I mean? It's not Cooking Mama.
Do you think I would like it?
I go back and forth because, like I said, it is tedious. that bit of stuff is tedious. But if you're interested in that time period and that as a framing device, I would recommend it.
Okay.
Like, when I heard what it's about, I kind of was like, eh. I don't care about soccer, you know? And I just don't have that, like, background. But because I got a code for it, I was like, I'll check this out. You know, I'll see what people are talking about. And I thought it was moving in a way that I appreciated. But not in a way that's like... I thought Venba was incredibly relatable and moving because of just what it's about at its core. It's about like growing up and like, even though I don't have, you know, the background of like being the children of like first generation immigrants, I do have the background of like growing up and having my relationship change with my mom and my dad. Everyone does, right? And so that's what I found to be so moving about that. This game has a little bit less of that, but enough for me to be able to appreciate and say like, oh, this was worth seeing. So I would recommend it if that sounds like something you're down for, but if you're not, I would say don't play it because it's just like, that's just all it is.
Do you know how much this is to purchase?
I do not. PlayStation Despolote. It is $15.
Okay,
yeah. on the PlayStation Store.
On Steam, it's a whopping $13.49.
Oh, you will actually get it for $13.49 because that's with PlayStation Plus.
Oh.
I liked it. Like I said, it was like 2 hours. I did it in a single sitting. And when it ended, I felt a certain way. Do you know what I mean? For the night, I kind of like folded my arms, went, huh.
you had to the internet and be like, what happened?
No, I think it's like pretty clear.
Okay.
There are some things that are weird. There's like some like non-literal bits. But I think the way it wraps up, like I said, where like the creator kind of comes in and talks about like, hey, here's sort of what this is, like what I'm trying to get at here. I was like, okay.
In the game?
Yeah. Like, oh. I told you, like, it's like, there's like a running narration of like the guy who wrote it. And it's not autobiographical exactly, but it's like based on his experience.
Okay. That makes sense.
You know?
Yeah.
Cause like I said, he says like, I wasn't allowed to come to this park, but the game is set in this one park.
But he like physically comes in as a human or as a narration?
No. Just as the narration.
I just pictured him like, hey, walk by.
Hi. It's like at the end of the Matrix Resurrection. There was a Matrix game where the Wachowskis come in and they're like, hey, the ending of this movie is just a fist fight, which is good for the movie, but in the game, it's not that good. So we're just going to have you fight a giant Agent Smith and you'll be a giant Neo. Is that okay?
And I would have been
what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. No, that's hilarious, though.
Yeah. They just come in and they're like pixelated things. It's fun.
That's good.
So there you go. That's Despolote. Like I said, if this is a similar feeling as Venba, it's not the same in terms of what it is, but it is a similar vibe in terms of like how it makes you feel.
Okay. And
I liked it.
All right. Go soccer.
Go goal.
Oh, wait. Go football. I'm sorry for being insensitive.
Football. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Justin, did you wrap up South of Midnight?
I did. I finally finished it.
What'd you think?
So the game itself, it turns into a jump dash game, which I'm a big fan of to begin
with. I know
you
like.
I think the story itself was interesting and kind of like how it all tied together. When you first start playing it, you're like, these stories don't really tie together, but then it does tie together. I think they do a good job about making it all make sense near the end. I think part of the problem is that it feels at the end the story is resolved, but the character and the world are unresolved. And not in a way that is good or like teasing for another game. It just kind of feels like a little unsatisfying with where it ended with the characters. I wish they would have had like a moment where they're teasing for something else or teasing for like what could be next. But instead it just kind of feels like you finish the story, you resolve one of the main character things, and then it's over. And I don't even like see like a happiness or like a greater point to the resolution other than they kind of have this lesson that sometimes like doing the right thing feels bad. And there's a fine line between like justice and vengeance. And it's interesting thoughts, but like I think ultimately where it like ended up, it felt like the last couple missions were just kind of put together with existing assets rather than really like building towards a climax.
Sure. That's a shame.
Which can sometimes happen with those games, but I still think the story itself was quite interesting. And from the beginning, one of the things I like about it is it introduced me to a whole series of lore that I think could be something that would be an interesting, moving forward if they choose different parts of the country and use like American mythology as like its backdrop.
That'd be cool.
I mean, like, wouldn't you like to, like, I mean, you're pretty up with American creatures and lore, right?
I mean, are you asking me if I would be very down to play a video game starring the Mothman?
Yeah.
Or the Kentucky Goblins?
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
I absolutely would. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the game has made me think about stuff throughout it. I just wish it wrapped up in a little bit more complex way.
Did you see, I imagine not just knowing your life, have you seen Sinners? Or have you heard like people talking about this movie?
No, but I really want to see that. That's like one of the things.
So me and Elena saw it. And from what it sounds like it would pair well with this game. Because it's like, when is this set? Do you know? South of Midnight?
There was a hurricane.
Alrighty. Well, but is it modern or it's modern, right?
I mean, a lot of it's set in like the bayous of Louisiana. So like, I don't want to be like reductive here, but it's not necessarily like a modern setting, but there are like times when there is more modern stuff. And sometimes you are like,
gotcha.
I think it's unclear where.
Okay. Gotcha. So, but like Sinners is set in the American South in like the 1930s, or it's like 1939 or something like that. And it also deals with vampires. But uses the American South and like Jim Crow and stuff like that as the backdrop for telling this story about these vampires and stuff like that, which I think is like a very interesting idea and premise. And it sounds like South of Midnight does something similar with its sort of mystical elements setting. Also, having a similar setup of like you have these characters who are, you know, like black people in the bayou and whatever. And like it's like this American mythology stuff. That sounds really cool.
It is more of a modern setting. It's definitely not like a older time, like with like other things. Like it basically one of the subplots is that your mom is a black woman and your dad is a white man who has passed away. And there actually is a little bit about it, but the reason it's something doesn't have to do with their race as much as you have the grandma who's like a pretty major character in there who's always like disapproved of you and your mom, and like the implications between why they disapprove is sort of race, but it goes a little bit deeper than that.
Sure.
But it really isn't a game that I felt like as I was playing it was making any kind of commentaries or statement on race as much. But there are moments that mention race and there are story beats that involve race.
Well, what I think is so interesting about that is like it's from what it sounds like, not what it's about, but the context of who these characters are based on their race, it also does make it what it's about a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And also like the area too, like you're talking about like New Orleans culture, like that is like, it is ingrained in that kind of
culture.
It's inherently
tied to
that. You cannot talk about that without talking about race to a certain degree. And some of the sub stories, again, as I said, they do deal with race. They also deal a little bit with ableism. They deal with a lot of trauma, like pretty much pick your trauma. They've talked about it in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Good game.
Well, it sounds interesting, and I'm glad that you finished it. I am interested in trying this one out. I think I'll do a hopefully at some point this year do a Game Pass roundup sort of playthrough of a bunch of stuff again with that BDS boycott willing. But speaking of Game Pass,
oh,
you started Clair Obscur, didn't you?
I did start Clair Obscur. Now I'm still pretty early into it. I have gotten to, the island. I started my expedition and I met my first companion character and I've started through that first dungeon. So really I'm like in the first dungeon, right? So
that's
pretty...
with, Lune, the magic dealer.
Yeah. Why put shoes on, girl?
Oh, dude, that was the first thing I Elena was watching me play this, and, like, you know, the running around, and I was commenting about, like, how much I like the character design, or, like, the expedition outfits, and then as soon as Lune shows up, I'm like, and, like, her thing is, like, almost the same, but, and then I was like, but why the fuck is she not wearing shoes? Yeah. And I get she flies, she, like, floats around, but, like,
I don't care, we'll put shoes on.
Put fucking shoe that time.
Yeah, what are you doing? And like, even like I first noticed it in like the area, like when you're like on the dock before you like go off to,
she didn't have shoes on.
She didn't have shoes on.
It was like a disheveled,
it was not like she was like dealing with like whatever. It was that was her outfit. That's her choice. She chose that.
Insanity.
I like how that's what we're talking about with this game. But, I got to admit, and this might be like something that they kind of address a little bit later. I think one of the things that really benefited me in playing this game was you telling me a little bit about what the core of the story was, because I do feel like while they do kind of set it up, they drop you in the middle of this world, and before you really understand what is happening, you're kind of just given breadcrumbs to what the story is. I think the world itself is so interesting, but it's such... it's not an afterthought. It's literally what the whole game is about, but they don't do a really good job of explaining the situation to you, and they make you just kind of experience it, which is a narrative choice. And I think there are times when I wish I got a little bit of like what happened a little bit sooner rather than just feeling like I have suddenly woken up in a bad dream, if that makes sense.
Yes. I do know what you mean. Cause like, yeah, they, if you don't know the premise, it does kind of drop you in a way that is like you could probably could pick it up. But it was, I think it's best enjoyed if you kind of know what.
Yeah, because it's so kind of cool and creepy and all this stuff that's going on with it. And I just really want to know like all of the weird stuff that's happening. And they do a good job of like creating intrigue in the story. And it, again, it makes sense. But like this understanding of like where you are, I think could help a little bit more. And even like some of the math stuff doesn't always work for me because like, again, the whole premise is you have this like giant godlike creature who paint a number counting down from 100 and everyone who is that number turns into rose petals. Like,
but then you start to think too, where you're like, hold on a second. People would for sure filter through this.
Right.
So if you're 32, the day of the Grimage for the 33 people, and then it's your birthday tomorrow. Now you're 33. You've escaped death. And then next year will be 32. So like, you know, like not everyone's going to get through, but like some people will certainly get through.
I guess,
they just never address that.
I guess my assumption would be that it would be the people like when you go up in age, the next year is when you would go. And it all happens at the same time.
So I see. So like, it's for like 32, even though you're 33, you'd go.
Yeah, you'd wait until that, like, it's your time now or whatever, I'm guessing. But like, even then, like a lot of like the numbers, it's crazy because essentially it's like every year you lose 2 years, right?
Why?
Because if you are like, you start at 100, that's the first thing painted. Everyone that's age 100 dies. And then it goes down to 99. That means like 98 and 99 go down. It like it almost skips 2 years because you get older and then the.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
So it's like it's like a confusing thing because eventually like it doesn't move like 1 year every year. It kind of is like as you get older, the things go down. So people keep aging.
And you're getting closer to it.
And you're getting closer to it. So it would take basically if you're born at 100, it would take till you're 50 until.
To meet you in the middle.
Whatever. These are just like thought experiments. I mean,
it's the thing where like for me, what I like about this sort of thing, and like, I think people could be like, well, Peter, you don't feel this way about everything, and I'm like, you're right, because I think if it's good enough and it's interesting enough, these sorts of things don't matter. Because like for me, who cares? You, like everything, there's enough other interesting stuff, and like the plot is hinged on this thing, yes, but it's not. You know, like that's not what it's about. If it were about the math of this, then yes, this stuff would bother me. But because it's just like, just deal with it. This is just the premise. You're just trying to save everyone from this fate. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got
and then you move on.
Yeah,
you know?
I'll follow that. I'll follow that.
Yeah, I like how I don't know if you can have gotten to this stuff yet. Have you gotten to like the overworld? No, right?
No, not yet. No, because I'm still in that first dungeon.
There are like campsites that you visit and stuff, and every time you do, the Paintress is just in the background. Like I just think the visuals of that is always really cool, just this looming sort of threat and stuff like that. Are you liking the combat and stuff? Are you liking it?
I think the hard thing that I'm dealing with is the timing of the parries, because I feel like it's not just timing attacks. Like in an action game, it's easier to start timing things. It feels like a lot of these attacks are specifically unintentionally awkward.
Well, they do that thing that like Elden Ring bosses do, because like they know that you have been playing FromSoft games for a while, where they like do that awkward delay.
Yep.
Where they'll like swing, but like the arm will swing, but then the blade will come like a half a second later.
Yep. Yep.
It's just like,
so like you can time that stuff, but like you can't like predict the timing until you deal with it. So
yes,
I assume that this is going to be a problem later on in the game.
It's that thing where like, I don't dislike having to learn the patterns of an enemy. I actually really do like that. But the ability to learn the pattern is predicated on me encountering that enemy and fighting it multiple times. And if it's the first time I'm fighting it, or if I'm only fighting it like once every 15, 20, 30 minutes, then I'm like, I'm not learning this
thing.
Right.
I don't remember what your pattern is versus another pattern. Exactly. Are there a lot of enemy varieties that you would encounter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is a little bit frustrating.
It's cool. But that's not going to stop. Well, that said, it's kind of like in one area, there's like four enemies.
Yeah.
And like you're going to fight four enemies for like an hour, hour and a half. And then you move on to a different place that there are four enemies. And like, so I do appreciate that it's, yes, there's a lot of enemy variety, but like in one area, it's always going to stick with the same handful. But it's still kind of like that thing of if you go back to an older whatever, or you encounter like those older enemies, you're just like, what the fuck was your deal again?
Yeah,
like,
how do I do that? What are you timing? And it was frustrating too with how they taught you that, because when they first teach you it, they literally freeze the game and tell you to press the button.
Yes.
You got to do it. And it really doesn't really teach you the timing or anything, or how to get the timing. I wish there was a better tutorial to do that. So one of the things that I did to like start practicing and getting the time ready was right at the beginning of the doc, you have that like the second fight with Mael, and like you can just keep doing that over and over again. So I was just using that to get a little bit used to like what the combat was and the timing was. But I do think the tutorialization kind of sucked with how they like prepare you for each of the characters and stuff like that. Regardless, I can be critical of this all day long. I'm assuming I'll get it. In worst case, I'll put it down to expedition or difficulty or like the easiest one and like just beat the game that way. But I'm very intrigued by the story. I think the game itself is like pretty in terms of its style. Like it's graphically pretty.
It's this thing where its art style has good art direction, but it does not look that good.
Right, right.
Like the faces look bad.
the animations are pretty bad, I think, like specifically like moving around the world and stuff like that. But
who cares, because it looks good.
Yeah.
And it has the style down, and like that's the stuff that I actually care about. And because it looks like Assassin's Creed in terms of like the fidelity of the characters and stuff. Those characters look okay, but it doesn't matter if the game is good.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. What's the name?
Like the writing is really good. What's that?
What's the name? It's called Fromage. Is that what they call it when everyone turns to rose petals?
Gromage with a G, which is a French word that means something, but it's like moving on or something.
Okay.
Like,
so
you know how they like swear in French, because it's very French.
Yeah. So fromage isn't that cheese?
I don't know.
Fromage is cheese. So when I was hearing gromage, I kept hearing fromage.
Yes, it is.
I was like, what the fuck funny. Do they keep saying cheese? Like, that's all I was thinking. Like, what is this cheese that's going to happen? And clearly I knew what was going to happen, because you kind of told me and everything like that. But like,
yeah,
like I kept thinking cheese. I was like, that's an odd name to call this. And thank you for clearing that up, because I really would have probably docked it about 3 points if they called the event cheese every year. It's the cheese time.
The cheesening.
What if they just turn into like just like nacho cheese? Just queso.
Um, I like the Frenchness of this game. It's unique. It's weird. I don't know if it works all the time, but I kind of don't care because it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, did you find the mime?
No, not yet.
They're in that dock scene. There's like a hidden mime who's just like a side alternate, like mini boss that you can fight. And the first time it happened, I was like, what the fuck? Like, why is there a mime?
What in actually in like before you go on the expedition?
Yeah. It's like a missable optional mini boss. And then there's like mimes throughout that you fight and whatever. But it's also like this thing where it's just like, what time period? Like the Eiffel Tower is here, but like what time period is it?
Well,
like it's
not so they Earth, never explain this? They never explain this?
What, the mime?
No, like the time period.
I don't know.
Are you saying that like to not ruin spoilers? Okay.
You will understand by the time the game is over, there are answers for everything. Okay. I haven't finished the game, but I know how it ends and I understand all of
because
that.
I think what happened is like the place they were at just kind of got transported to like an alternate dimension or something is what it felt like happened. And like
I will neither confirm nor deny this.
Okay. Well, yeah, but yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, like I think that's a perfectly fine theory to have.
Because they were talking, there was a name, they said something had happened and before the whatever, and which is why I was assuming it was like all the land got like moved into this alternate portal or something like that. But that's just me assuming.
There are, I think it's a good thing to do to theorize about like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. I think this will be a game that when it comes time for the sequel, and I would assume this game's going to get a sequel, this is going to be fantastic. And like, this is no knock on the game, but like having a bigger team to have like more, not like a huge, like AAA studio team, but like to have a bigger team in there to like do work on this animation stuff. Actually, like some of the cutscenes are good, but like, I still think they're kind of like stage play-y in how they act out instead of it being something that is like this true, like the whole expedition, when you get on the boat and you leave the boat, it feels like a bunch of like separated segments instead of one crazy. Can you imagine like if it was like D-Day type of like explosions on that boat, you get to the beach and all this stuff starts happening. Like it could have been, it's good, but like with a bigger budget and more awareness behind it and the experience already making this, it could be amazing.
Does it ever bother you that you and I just have the same opinion about everything? I wrote when I had a job at TG about like Claire Expedition 33 is great. Whatever they do next is going to be fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. because yeah, like they're going to have a bigger budget. And they're going to just learn stuff from this. Mm-hmm. Because this game, like, as you go, I think I find it to be infuriating that there is no way to tell what direction to go. And people will be like, if you actually look up above you, there are lamps that guide you to the objective. And I would like to say, have you played the game? When does that start? When does that happen? Because I've literally not seen these. I've looked for them. I've not seen these lamps. People are like, there actually is a direction. You just don't know the game. And I'm like, I'm playing it. It's not there. Like, because I don't like a lot of people are saying like it needs a mini map. Like, I don't know. I think there's other ways to get around that. But like some sort of direction would be good. Or in battle status effects, you get notified what a status effect is the first time it happens. But then you can't. Like, there's just, like, the icon underneath the enemy health bar or your health bar, but it doesn't... I have no idea what it does, because there's, like, there's a bunch of them, you know what I mean? Like, I don't remember what those do. Or, like, you can't see enemy weaknesses. You cannot see them. You just have to pay attention and remember, which, like, come on, guys. You guys love Persona so much. Fucking put that in there.
Make it easier for me. I will say the one thing that is going to be a bit of a barrier for this game, meaning I probably won't play it quite as much as I want to, is it is hard to read the text on my backbone. There is much reading. And like the accessibility options are pretty bad in terms of that stuff. Like you can make the dialogue subtitles bigger, but you can't just make text size bigger. That is something that's going to make it a little hard, because this is one of those games you kind of have to go into menus pretty frequently to like move things around and stuff like that. So I'm sitting there at night last night kind of going to bed, like trying to get a little bit more thoughts on it. And I kind of just put it down because it wasn't a relaxing experience for me to go to bed, because I'm literally like it's up to my eyes, the little backbone, as I'm trying to like read some of the text and everything. But regardless, I will play it.
Something about the backbone, by the way. My friend Dave was talking to me. He's like, is there a way to play games portably? And I was like, oh, like you can do it on your phone. Why? And he's like, because he wants to play The Last of Us games because he's been watching the show. But he's like, he bought the first one, but he's like, I felt like I was just hogging the TV all the time. And so like, I just couldn't do that. And I was like, oh, it's like, well, you could, I was like, depending on your internet, you could try the portal. But I was like, Justin likes it, but I don't know. I have no experience with it. So I don't know what that like, it's actually like for someone who's like maybe not a gamer, you know? But he bought it and he's like, I've been playing The Last of Us. It's great. It's like, okay, there you go.
It truly is a great system. Like I cannot, like it's to the point where I'm like, do I just buy it for the PlayStation?
I did not, when the portal came out and I was like, I don't know who this is for. I think this is silly. And I think that I am very clearly wrong in that, because it's very obvious now to me, like, oh, this is for people like you or for people like Dave, or like, I think there's a lot of use cases for this. Obviously it's not for me because it's just not a problem I have, but like, I totally get it now. And I think that's a great thing.
I could just be like our friends Ryan and Kate and have two just massive TVs on top of each other at our house, and that way,
dude. That's kind of the dream, though, right? Just like put them in a corner, so like one wall, one on the other, and then just like play Baldur's Gate 3 together.
Yeah,
what a dream.
Yeah, man.
Oof, what a dream. So you go. I'm glad that you're liking it, Justin. Let's talk about the news.
Woo!
Sony has purchased Team LFG, which apparently stands for Looking for Group. That's not what LFG means.
Looking for, wait, what does it mean?
Let's fucking go.
Oh, I took it as Looking for Group because they have the Destiny LFG.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be let's fucking go, but like there's this, like the first time I heard that, it's like there was like a I think it was an app or something like that. It was a way for people to find
fire other players
before they, I don't even know if they have it anymore, like in actual Destiny 2, but it was a way that you could go on there and like easily get a raid group together. And with the Destiny community, how welcoming it actually is, even though the game is like very not welcoming to new people, like the LFG community was pretty good at like finding, people.
That makes a lot more sense. I've literally never heard of that LFG in any other context other than let's fucking go. But that makes sense because this team was an offshoot of Bungie.
Yeah.
So let me just read you this statement here. This is from the PlayStation blog, starts from Herman Holst, and then is a statement from Team LFG. Today, I'm thrilled to officially unveil a new studio in the PlayStation Studios family. Team LFG originated at Bungie, but has also rallied developers from across the industry to bring to life an ambitious incubation project that I'm very excited about. The studio is now fully formed and is ready to be introduced to the world. I'll let Team LFG introduce themselves properly and give a tiny glimpse of what they've been working on. So, to be clear here, it's not that they've acquired this studio exactly, is that a studio has been formed inside of Bungie and then has since split off from Bungie to be its own thing and has acquired a lot of other talent. So it's not an acquisition exactly, it's more of just like, hey, we're announcing that we've opened a new studio kind of out of, you know, from this. So LFG says, hello world, it's a delight to meet you and we're very grateful to be joining PlayStation Studios. Our studio is headquartered in Bellevue, Washington, with team members working on-site and remotely throughout the U.S. and Canada. We are a team comprised not just of industry veterans who have shipped titles like Destiny, Halo, League of Legends, Fortnite, Roblox, and Rec Room. What is Rec Room?
You know, Rec Room, the PlayStation thing where you're in like a rec room. I think I'm not crazy here.
No. This is a virtual reality game, MMO.
Oh, I was wrong. You know.
Do you ever like just like hear about a game and you're like
Roblox?
This is the biggest, like Roblox. Yeah, it's like this is the biggest thing in the world, and I have no fucking clue. I've never heard of this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, But also industry newcomers with fresh creative perspectives and skills. We are passionate about exceptional action-based gameplay, moment-to-moment game feel, and richly social virtual worlds. The LFG in Team LFG stands for Looking for Group. We are driven by a mission to create games where players can find friendship, community, and belonging. We want our players to feel excited when they log on to discover their teammates already hanging out online. We want our players to recognize familiar names and make myths and memes out of one another. We want our players to love remembering that one time they pulled off that play and changed the whole story of the match. As we say on the team, that's the good stuff. Fun. We want to make immersive multiplayer worlds propelled by action games that players can learn, play, and master for countless hours. We want to build our games with our communities, inviting players to be a part of our development process throughout early access playtests. It's critical that we stay nimble enough to react to player feedback, not just in our lead up to launch, but throughout live service as we continue to grow the game and community for years to come. Our first game is a team-based action game that draws inspiration from fighting games, platformers, MOBAs, life sims, and frog type games. That was an astounding number of types of games.
That was
players
random.
Players will inhabit a lighthearted comedic world set in a brand new mythic science fantasy universe. We can't wait to reveal more. Till then, we'll do our best. Thanks for reading, Team LFG. Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like they're making like MMO type or like just multiplayer games. Not really for me, it seems like, but I'm also like, I don't know, let's see what you got, you know?
You don't like fighting game, platformer, MOBA, life sim, and frog type games?
Yeah, you know, those are all my my cup of tea.
You know, there's one
what
person out
is
there
frog
like,
type
let's
game?
Fucking
what does that mean?
Go! Probably like Frogger.
I think it's like a frog type games.
Is that a thing other than just Frogger?
That's what I'm saying. Ethan Gatch from Kotaku reports, like, what does that mean? Okay, so no, this is, they just said that and it's not a thing. In the same way that like Starfield was like, we're like a NASA punk. And it's like, that's not a thing. Like, oh, I know what you're trying to say here, but like, what?
Is this just another Frog Fractions? Like, all this shit is just, like, the next Frog Fractions.
Oh, I hope so. Or Frog Detective 4, maybe. That's so fucking funny. I don't know. Like, frog type is, like, what does this mean?
I just think it's going to be, like, you're a frog character or whatever. And
you must be, right?
Yeah, there has to be. Or just a non sequitur. If that's what they're going to be like, this is the kind of studio I'm going to support.
Yeah, where it's just like, it's just fun just doing weird stuff.
They probably went up to like the Bungie management. They're like, listen, we have this idea for a frog type game. What do you think? And they're like, you are going to leave us. You start this on your own. We don't want to be associated with you.
And they're like, it's called Concord.
Oh,
Justin, here's some good news in the industry. Giant Bomb. We talked about them last week. They were the future of that website and podcast were sort of up for, it seemed like it was being shut down. And the fandom had shut them down because, several of the key people had left the website, the podcast. And then now, Giant Bomb announced that Jeff Grubb, Jeff Bacalar, Dan Reichert, Mike Minotti, and Jan Ochoa have purchased the website from fandom, and that they now own it, and that all of their stuff is going to be creator-driven and creator-owned. So, hey, that's kind of cool, especially for something that has been passed around by a lot of different, like, larger corporations and stuff like that, and has had sort of a troubled life that a lot of the people who actually do the podcast and stuff, like, have presented solutions for, and despite that have not been able to... management has gotten in the way of those solutions, basically. So now it's cool that it's sort of in the hands of those people. What do you think?
Did you by any chance watch any of the PAX panel when they announced that?
No, I was out of town, but I know that they called Mike Minotti to be like, hey, do you want to own it? And yeah. He was like, yeah. And then that was their announcement.
Well, and they also like start like on the panel, like talk a little bit about like all the ownership that they had and everything like that. And then they make this announcement and like, and we are under new ownership and you're looking at them. And then like, it's this like kind of like big moment, which is kind of cool to like, again, this is the perfect story. It's exactly what we were talking about last week. The idea that what makes one of these companies like a Giant Bomb are the people who make the company giant bomb. It's not
yes.
the overhead people. It's not even, it's the name to a certain degree, but it's the people. Any of these websites, any of these things, you get rid of the people who make them. It doesn't matter what they turn into. Like, this is the giant bomb people. The cast that I am comfortable with now being giant bomb, buying this and hopefully just opening a whole new type of empire with content that they want to make. And if they want to make yeah. it, I guarantee you, I want to listen to it.
And I think that, it's just good to have the people who do make this stuff who are, it is possible to have five people work on a profitable podcast and website. Is it going to have year over year exponential growth? Probably not. But can it be sustainable? Yes. And that is what matters. And that's the good thing about all of this, you know? I just think the more that the people who are actually workers are owning these sorts of things, the better it's going to be, because they don't have to meet those shareholder parent company quotas and things like that, because those all are terrible. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, I don't know, God, how to think about this. It's not like everyone can do this, right? I think the fact that the giant bomb and the people on the giant bomb panel are well known to a fact, and they have trust in the industry really helps them a lot. I mean, going yes. from zero to a profitable business with four people that you're able to run something like this is not four people. I mean, there's more, but it's not an easy thing to do. So they are in a good spot to do this, and it's still a hard thing to do, but I want more companies like this to exist than more companies I don't know.
I would trade this for all of the future of Polygon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
100% every single time.
Yeah.
Justin, GTA 6, we talked about this a little bit last week, has been delayed into 2026, May, I think, 12th or something like that. It is coming out. But in the meantime, Rockstar has published a new trailer for the game. It has 104 million views. It's been out for less than a week, so that's kind of crazy. But I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on this trailer, because I've never played a Grand Theft Auto game. And I have a lot of thoughts about this trailer. I'm curious what you think.
Well, I mean, to me, there's a moment when you see one of the characters coming home and then pushing through the door, and it kind of looks like it's transitioned into gameplay.
Yes.
That I'm like, well, that's a fucking GTA game. And I don't mean that as a bad thing, but I mean, this is going to be a Grand Theft Auto game. It's not going to, I don't foresee it to suddenly reinvent the wheel with what it is doing and what it's like. It's going to
yes.
obviously feel more modern than Grand Theft Auto 5. It's going to look nicer than Grand Theft Auto 5, but it will still be unmistakably a Grand Theft Auto game. I mean, the first GTA game I played was 3, and even though the games are drastically different since then, there is this DNA and formula behind those games that is Rockstar Grand Theft Auto. So my initial impressions were the game looks beautiful, and this will be more Grand Theft Auto. And let me tell you, after how many years? 10, 15, 20, 30? How long has GTA 5 been out?
2013, so 12.
Okay, after 12 years, I'm ready to play another one.
I watched this trailer and I was like, damn, I want to play this game.
Oh, wow, that's great.
This looks really cool. I don't know. Obviously, it's not showing you any, of the game, what the game is. And it's a third-person shooter, open world, whatever. That's not in question. But, what I think this really establishes is the tone of this story. And one of the things that has kind of kept me uninterested largely in a lot of the other GTA games is that just hearing about their stories to me seems widely unrelatable. You know what I mean? Or a lot of the times it's you're playing as horrible, unredeemable people. And that's fine. There is obviously I don't hate that as a concept, but sometimes I just like a little bit of I like a little bit of charm and character, you know what I mean? In a way that is a little bit less than what those other games have done. And for this, I'm looking at this relationship between, I think Jason and Lucia are their names.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, there's something charming and they have chemistry, and there's something really relatable about these two people being in love and being like kind of forced to have this like hectic, crazy life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I look at this and I'm like, these people have character and charm and I like it.
How far did you get through GTA 5?
No, I have never played it.
So it's one of those things that I know what you're saying is like, it makes sense to me. And I think these characters do have much more like human appeal as like the relationship. I think
this is just from my, right. I have no context.
So
for it.
I think Grand Theft Auto 5 might appear not to be like this, but what they really do well in that game is your three protagonists all fit a different type of character, a different type of criminal, a different type of journey in a really interesting way. And the whole game is kind of like them like redefining like who they are as people. And like, you're getting to, you can't really humanize Trevor, but like the way they introduce the characters, I think it's like one of the great things about Grand Theft Auto 5 is they create awesome characters and awesome stories with this. And I think it is truly one of the strengths of Rockstar. And I think this looks like a higher polished version of that in a way that I'm very excited for. I would challenge you to at least try Grand Theft Auto 5 before this comes out, probably in the next 4 years.
Yeah, I would be interested in it, but I from what it seems like, that is a game that's like, oh, old games are old.
Feels like it, man. Feels like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But yeah, so there you go. I am looking forward to this. Before we wrap here, Justin, did you see any of the preview stuff for Death Stranding 2 on the beach?
I did, and I am excited about this game.
I watched SkillUp's video on it, and I couldn't be more interested in this game based on what he revealed. He gave some like they got to play like 30 hours of it.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It was insane.
Isn't that crazy?
Usually you get like 1 or 2 days with the game. He's like, we had full like four or five days to just play this, and he's like, and I think I am in act 2 of 3, but like, there's a lot of this game I haven't seen.
And even on top of that, Dan Reichert was in one of his like preview things was talking about how he wanted to like just stop playing it on that third day and just kind of like fuck around. But then the people at Kojima Studios were basically like, hey, can we get to this story beat? Why don't you just mainline it to get this story beat? Because there's like a story beat they wanted the previewers to get to at the end of it, which I think is just kind of crazy that like, you had that much time to play the game, to do whatever you want, and it still wasn't enough.
Right. 100%. It seems really, really cool. The one thing about the previews, though, that has disheartened me.
Oh?
Can you guess what people said that I was like, fuck?
It's a walking simulator.
Everyone was like, you got to play the first one. 100%, you got to play the first one. And it's not that I don't want to. Well, truth be told, I have some time on my hands, but you know what I mean? Like I was like, oh gosh, like I want to play it, but like, I just don't know if I'm going to have the time to do it. But I guess I do. I guess I very like obviously do right now, but
I'm going to I think it's one of those things, to be honest, with that first game, you can probably play it for 5 hours and then watch the rest of the game.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
To kind of understand it. I think there's, it's probably like, there's a couple of like the Mads Mikkelsen parts. If you like play like 2 or 3 of those, you'll get to the point of what you need with it, I think.
Okay.
Because I think one of the interesting, cool, unique things about that game is that it is such an oddly paced game, but in a way that is both not stressful and like not a problem. Like, part of the game is just like the slow, enjoyable journey. You'll get it and you'll understand it and you'll understand the important story beats after the first 5 hours. And if you want to keep playing it because you're finding it somehow relaxing and scratching that monkey side of your brain that just likes to like do like monotonous rote things, which sounds like a negative, but truly it is something that I love about that game. I think you will know if you want to keep playing it or not. And if you do decide to keep playing it, you'll want to keep playing it.
Yeah, 100%.
And the story itself, I think the cutscenes, they're Kojima cutscenes. They're like, you know, 20 minutes of nonsense in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what happened at the end of that game, Peter? I don't quite frankly know.
Oh.
I do, but like.
Sure.
You know.
I'm excited for this. I'm going to play Death Stranding 2 at some point. I have to.
You don't have to do anything.
It's not really my job anymore now, is it?
Oh.
But it looks interesting. It sounds interesting. I would like to give this a shot. So
yeah,
there you go.
This is the perfect example to me of why sequels can be important for certain games. Death Stranding mm-hmm. itself was such a unique mix of everything, but it needed a little bit more polish. It needed like not just like another like more cutscenes or anything like that. It just needed like a second pass through with a lot of its stuff to make it a little bit easier. Easier. That's the wrong word. It's not that it's hard. It just needed to fix some things to make it even more playable and fun. And this game to me seems to do that. The cool thing is that it seems to be much more about having a band together rather than being separated and isolated. It's much more about being in a group. And I think that's cool. I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but like where it takes place is kind of interesting.
So that's the thing is, if you don't want to hear about where this takes place, or like if you don't want to have a like premise, spoilers, then you can probably just end the episode here, 'cause we're going to wrap up after we talk about this. But like, so if you're not on board for that, now that this is your warning, here it comes. 3, 2, 1. It being set in Australia could not have made me more interested.
I know. The McSpider. You're going to be able to deliver McSpider. One of those.
But hearing Skillup talk about it too, because he's Australian, was interesting, because he was like, what? And he's like playing it, and he's like, we're going to go to Australia. And he's like, I thought we were just going to dip in there. And then like, no, the game is set in Australia. And he also made a interesting point too. He was like, I'll tell you this. It does not resemble Australia in any way. He said that one of the people apologized to him for putting a snow-capped mountain in the middle of the continent, or the country rather, because it is just fully a flatland desert in the middle of it. But he's like, it doesn't resemble Australia in any way. But the first game does not resemble the United States in any way. Like, who cares? But there is like cultural stuff in here that he's like, that I did notice that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm just very interested in playing this game. And I'm even more interested after the preview than I was before the preview.
Me too.
So I'm excited. This will be probably one of the highlight games to me of 2025.
I would agree. Yeah. So I think that's going to do it for us today. Shorter episode because we are talking about The Last of Us.
If I only were to lose you.
She does. She sings it.
She sings it.
We're going to talk about The Last of Us. You know, Discord, Patreon, GKS, Josh Durham, Jay Null. Catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.